Welcome to Gleaming the Tube, the podcast where Kevin and Mike watch a film in which somebody rides a skateboard at some point. Finally, a podcast where people talk about movies.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kevin.
1994's PCU, directed by Hart Bochner, tells the story of college life at the fictional Port Chester University and represents what the filmmakers say is an exaggerated view of contemporary college life in the early 90s. There are slobs, there are snobs, and there is the specter of political correctness, and there is a little bit of skateboarding. The film features Jeremy Piven in his first lead role, a young Jon Favreau, David Spade, and George Clinton at his P-Funk All-Stars. And we watched this movie.
Oh, we did. We did watch it, Kevin.
We did not watch it easily because this movie is somewhat famous right now for like streaming nowhere. You can't rent it or buy it on Amazon or iTunes or any of the usual spots. I found it on the Internet Archive. I actually watched this movie on the Internet Archive, where I'm sure it is up with dubious legality.
But yes,
it is there nonetheless. And yet, I feel like this is also a movie because that for a period of time it was aired on Comedy Central roughly every 15 minutes.
Yes.
This is a movie that a lot of people know and a lot of people have a lot of affection for.
Yeah, I've seen it approximately 3,000 times on Comedy Central. So
I was going to ask, Mike, what is your relationship to this film?
It's exactly that. It's one of those, I think I didn't see it in the theater. I think, you know, of course I rented it on VHS like everybody else the first time I saw it, but then it was one of those, it was on every weekend, you know, after 10 p.m. if I'm not mistaken. I think Comedy Central would air movies almost unedited after a certain, am I making that up, or is that,
I think because cable channels are not bound by FCC regulations around indecency or obscenity,
right?
So right. You know, because Comedy Central took ads, I think they started advertising that they would show unedited movies late at night. I mean, having said that, PCU is a PG-13 film. It is not particularly raunchy. I know that there's apparently an R-rated cut that the writers and the directors are sitting on that they insist is much funnier and a much better film. And if that is the version that had been released, that this film would have been a massive hit, perhaps, instead of the massive flop it was. There was not a lot of clamoring for, say, a sequel. I think this is a movie that has had a little bit of a cult around it in the intervening years because it was aired so often. I know it's one of those things like Empire Records. Like, a lot of people my age seem to really be like, yeah, PCU.
Yeah.
I don't know. I watched it, and I don't think this movie is very good.
it's all kind of toothless. You know what I mean? It's very, it's one of those things that I think I probably watched it in the background while I was doing other shit most of the times that I saw it. You know, it's there's not much to it really. But there is some grunge rock and some skateboarding, I guess, you know,
and some funk.
Yeah. It's a very sort of jaded and glib movie, and that's a little bit difficult to give a shit about.
There's an interesting thing where the writers, one of the writers was Zach Penn, who's gone on to like a fairly significant career in Hollywood. Like, he was one of the writers on the like Marvel's The Avengers, for instance.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the writers are basically basing this on their experience at Wesleyan University.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really a fraternity, but this place called Eclectic Society or Eclectic House, which is sort of like a pseudo frat where a bunch of the artsy kids would go, which I don't think the writers were a member of it, but they hung out there a lot. And someone like Buffy the Vampire Slayer creator Joss Whedon was a person who lived at Eclectic House at Wesleyan City, for instance. So people like that. And we all know that Buffy the Vampire Slayer creator Joss Whedon emerged from Eclectic House as the least problematic individual.
Yes, yes. He, a very well-adjusted cat.
So it's got that sort of like weird, like I know, like it's been a few months now, but when we did that movie Glory Days, there's that weird script people write about college where it's this kind of like hagiography about like them and their friends. And I feel like this movie is sort of that. You know, I'm not gonna get into kicking and screaming again because you like, go back and listen to the Glory Days episode to hear us talk about kicking and screaming. But what I am going to compare this movie unfavorably to is Animal House.
Yeah, yeah. It certainly aspires to be Animal House.
It's very clearly trying to be like Animal House for Generation X.
Yes.
And perhaps there is something to be said for every generation getting the Animal House it deserves. but I do not feel that. I feel like Animal House... Even though like there are ways in which it has not aged well, I think Animal House is a very good movie. And I think part of that is because this whole slobs versus snobs concept was relatively new when Animal House came out.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, you know, I mean, the Marx Brothers aside, I think like one of the first movies to really do that was MASH, but MASH was kind of heady. Animal House, I think, came out and it was raunchy and it was funny, and John Belushi, you know, took off like a rocket in that movie, but he's not in the movie that much.
He's a very minor character. Yeah.
Yeah. They sort of realized that, like, let's just deploy him. If you deploy him like sparingly, it will be much funnier, but the other characters sort of pick up the slack. And, you know, Animal House is very broad, but I do think it feels slightly more emotionally true than PCU, where every character is a cartoon character.
Right. Right. And it's got that sort of like built in. I always think about like the problem that people have with PC culture, or now we would call it woke culture, whatever. And it's always based on this like insistence that the people that people don't really believe the things that they're standing up for, because the people who are against that sort of anti-culture, like it all seems to sort of like predicate on the idea that everyone is just full of shit and nobody really has any actual convictions. And the characters in this movie, like you said, they're just the broadest brushstroke characters of feminists or hippies or, you know, computer nerds, whatever. And it's a little bit hard to sort of sustain, you know, the whole movie sort of gritting its teeth at, none of this is real. And it's like, I don't know, man, maybe people do actually believe in things, and why don't you just shut up and leave them the fuck alone?
Or people are complicated.
Yes.
And, like, there's something to be said for having a movie about human beings. Like, did you see Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some?
Yeah.
That's a movie about college that felt like it was about human beings, or Dazed and Confused, which is not about college, but it's about young people. Like,
yes,
those feel like real characters. Those characters feel really thought out and lived in, and you know what motivates them. Whereas in PCU, the only thing that seems to motivate the characters is like whatever's going on screen. I completely agree with you that this movie is really steeped in this mid-90s sort of idea of like cloaking everything in irony and like sarcasm being the law of the land.
Yeah.
And I think for a certain type of person, particularly the type of people who are doing comedy in Hollywood, there was this idea that things like racism and things like sexism were problems that had been solved. And therefore you could joke about them. And I think if there's one thing we have learned in the last 20, 25 years, is that is absolutely not the case.
Right. Like, no one's just being a pill about it. It's very real. And you know what? Maybe on your college campus. No, I'm sure there was. I was about to make a caveat, but yeah, on a college campus, I'm sure there was plenty of misogyny and plenty of homophobia and plenty of racism to deal with. And the idea that it's all through this lens of like, is sort of, it made me like, it wasn't, I don't want to say that it was like cringeworthy, because I don't even know if it was worthy of that, but I was kind of like, oh, everything is so, you know, everything is so precious and not real, and all these people are sort of play acting at being involved in these things. And
yeah, I mean, and the filmmakers have gone on to say that, like, well, the actual real villains are David Spade and the other, like, kind of actually racist preppies, and they are absolutely worse than kind of the characters who are protesting for causes in this movie. All the characters who are protesting for causes come together and dance to P-Funk and hang out with Jeremy Piven at the end. And David Spade and his crew are like, you know, like Niedermeyer
in
Animal House are like, man, are kind of like ruined. But I want to get to this Jeremy Piven performance.
The Piv.
Really made me appreciate how, like, deceptively easy what Bill Murray did in the 80s was, and how no one else has really been able to pull it off.
Right.
Because he's clearly going for that. It's interesting, like, I know they say he's, like, you know, been in college for 7 years or whatever, but he looks 40 years old in this movie.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So he's a 40-year-old senior in college, which makes it seem like that makes it seem weird. You know, he's kind of got some male pattern baldness happening.
It's funny that, like, he plays even older. The joke is that he's the old, you know, the trope of the older guy who's still in college, but he looks even older than that.
Yeah.
Like you said, he looks 40 years old.
And not that the Belushi looked like he was in college in Animal House, but he had that line, like, 7 years of college for what in it. And, like, it made sense just, like, as because he was not the main character. He was just this weird guy who lived in the house.
Right.
But yeah, the Piven performance I find super weird. Whenever I see Jeremy Piven now, I think about, this was 10 years ago. The comedian Dane Cook posted a photo of himself and Jeremy Piven and Kid Rock. And it was like, like kicking it 3 a.m. Vegas style with Piv and Rock. And I remember someone, like, reposted it and wrote, "Hey, it's Mount Douchemore." And I think of that every time I see Jeremy Piven.
That is a monument to a certain kind of dude. I remember there was a joke. I think Tina Fey made a joke on Update one time where Jeremy Piven had gotten involved in some incident where he was being a loudmouth douchebag, and her joke was, "Be careful, dude, you're acting just like Jeremy Piven." The Piv. Yeah, it's funny. You always wonder with, like, what is your motivation? Are you trying to be a good guy or a total asshole or somewhere in between those things? You know, like that I actually thought the scene where it flashes back to his behavior in freshman year where David Spade's character was his roommate. It's like, that's violently inappropriate. Like that's not a funny story.
The thing that I thought of, like, with Jeremy Piven and his pals, like, one of the first things they do is they kind of go into the school cafeteria and start hurling raw meat on the vegan protesters. And it made me think of, like, Piv and crew are trying to position themselves as these sort of trickster Bugs Bunny figures. But the thing about Bugs Bunny is Bugs Bunny never bothers anyone until they fuck with him.
Yes.
And then Bugs Bunny, like, turns to the camera and says, "Of course you realize this means war." And that was, like, the director Chuck Jones always said, like, that was what I needed to do to have the audience on Bugs Bunny's side.
Right. Yeah. He's this Weisenheimer who's just as happy eating a carrot and sitting in his hole until Elmer Fudd fucks with him.
And they can figure that out in a 7-minute cartoon.
Yes. Yeah.
But in this, which is an admittedly short movie, I think it's less than 90 minutes, which is impressive. Piv and the gang are, and then, like, no one in the house is displaying any human traits beyond, like, these two skateboard, this one watches TV all the time.
Yes.
Jon Favreau is stupid and stoned. And, like, Favreau's not good in this movie, but it's very early in his career. And, you know, hey, he was in a shitty movie. He had a small part in a shitty movie early in his career. Good for him.
Yeah. Well, and I also, it's funny because I actually did like the gag of, like, the super 90s, he's a music major who's never heard of any music, you know, like that's actually a pretty solid gag. But you're right. Like it's funny because I was thinking the same thing about the meat hurling incident. And I was wondering if it was like a side effect of me being like almost 50 now, where I saw that scene. I was like, why don't you just mind your own fucking business? Yeah. Like, couldn't you just go on with your life and leave these fucking people alone? Like, what do you give a shit? But yet they were, you know, incited to do this simply because these people had an opinion about something and we're sharing it. Fuck you.
Ain't I a stinker?
Yes.
And there is the scene where, and this is a scene that I think has leaked into the wider culture. Like, I think if PCU has had any cultural footprint, it is when Piven says to Favreau, you're going to wear the shirt of the band you're going to see. Don't be that guy. Because yes. That is something that you hear said and posted about on memes to this day.
Yeah. I remember the first time I saw the movie, I thought, oh, shit, am I that guy? But I could never afford a T-shirt, so I never had the shirt of the band. But it is solid advice. You don't want to be the guy wearing the T-shirt of the band you're going to see.
The one gag in this movie that made me laugh that I was like, that is funny, is when David Spade, as sort of the leader of the nasty preppy kids, shows the evil dean of the school, played by Jessica Walter, who would go on to do God tier work in Arrested Development, the flyer for the party at Eclectic House that was photoshopped or whatever, with like her head on a swimsuit modeled body. And when David Spade's sidekick like says completely seriously, what I figure they did is they cut out a picture of your head and put it over another picture. I've done a little collage work myself. That got me. I was like, that is funny.
Yep. That was,
I've done a little collage.
That line also grabbed me. I was like, wow, I'm a big fan of a really good micro performance. I love when in a movie when somebody who's on camera for like a minute and 50 seconds steals the movie for a second. And that I was like, this guy, who the fuck is this guy? Nailed it. And I actually kind of liked his like interaction with the Piven's character a few minutes later, where he was just like, you know, you get the sense that these guys, they're all like nemeses, but they also, it's college. You see them in line at the commissary to get your shitty bean burger, you know, every day. So you also have to sort of interact with these people.
Yeah. And that was a somewhat true to life. I mean, I certainly had nemeses in college.
Yes. You're a maker of enemies, Kevin.
Yes. The list is thousands long.
I remember when I was in a band with a kid who was much younger, but he had grown up in like the little Compton area and would listen to Shindig. And when he found out that I knew you, he was like, I want to kick that guy's ass. And I was like, why? And he was very upset because you guys were, I think he had actually called the show and asked you guys to play, like, I don't know what it would have been at the time, like whatever weird math post hardcore band he was into, and you dragged him mercilessly. And when he found out I knew you, he was very upset and was insisting he was going to beat you up if he ever saw you.
For the listeners who don't know, Shindig is the name of my old college radio show, which was inexplicably popular. And also explicably unpopular with a certain type of listener.
Well, I will tell you this, Kevin. You're being modest. I don't think it was inexplicably popular. It was a very good radio show. It was funny, and you played awesome songs. And I think that's kind of a formula for and you fucked with people on the air, which is, it's always.
Much like Jeremy Piven in PCU,
yes,
I would fuck with people on the air.
You would give them the hi-hat.
I do think one of the things this movie gets right is its choice of George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars to play the big party at the end as sort of the band that brings everyone together. Because even at the time, P-Funk were one of those bands that everyone could kind of agree on. Like, the hippies liked them, and the hip hop kids liked them, and the punk rockers liked them, because they were an awesome, funky band, and you could not deny that what they were doing was fantastic.
Right. And in 1994, they, on any given night, they were playing in some hall at some university somewhere to exactly what you said, a huge crowd of hippie kids. And like, even like the weird, you know, that weird kind of college Jimmy Buffett set we're into the P-Funk because they were the party band. So yes, I agree that, like, especially, you know, for the year that this was taking place, it couldn't have been any more on the nose. If it had been like a grunge band, it would have been appropriate, like, for the exact time, but that wouldn't have been the thing that brought everybody together, because, you know, the hippies would have said they were too loud, or, you know, but yeah, P-Funk was the perfect choice.
In the original script, it was Nirvana.
Huh.
But they couldn't get Nirvana.
But that wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked.
It would not have worked. And for obvious reasons, Nirvana were too big of a band.
Yeah.
At the time to
be
in this stupid fucking movie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I really like the gag where John Favreau's character, the total fuck up, just happens to manage to get the P-Funk, you know, the P-Funk All-Stars to show up at his college by mistake. That's a good gag.
I did think when they had their lunchbox full of like $7,000, I thought, so P-Funk gets none of this money for playing this party?
Yeah. George Clinton's like, so what?
You're charging people to come in.
I'm George Clinton. You're going to need to give me a couple grand here.
Director Hart Barkner, Mike.
Yeah.
I learned this today in reading about this movie. Played Ellis, the cokehead asshole yuppie in Die Hard. The guy who's like, Hans, I'm your white knight.
That's the guy who directed this movie?
That's the guy who directed this movie.
The gag where they bring him a Coke and he rolls his eyes at Hans Gruber's cat. That is in Die Hard. I'm talking about, that is one of my favorite jokes. That guy's the guy who directed this movie.
And I mean, he's great in Die Hard because everyone is great in Die Hard. There is not a thing in Die Hard that does not work. But as a director, I feel like he directed a short film with his pal John Lovitz. And that sort of got him the PCU gig. And I guess this was not a hit. So I don't think he did much directing beyond this. And I think you feel bad because he clearly wanted his career to go in that direction. I don't think it did because PCU was not successful. And I don't, like, this is not terrible. It's not a terribly directed movie. I don't think it's like a bold vision of new comedy and skewering of the PCs and the yuppies and the Reaganites. No one emerges unscathed from PCU, Michael. Pretensions everywhere are
rattled to their foundations.
You can do a movie where everyone is full of shit and it can work. Did you ever see Citizen Ruth?
Yes.
Is a movie where everyone is full of shit and it works. But that movie does not have Jeremy fucking Piven at the center as some sort of like arbiter of cool.
Right.
Like what works about that movie is no one is in the middle of it as the arbiter of cool.
Everyone's the dickhead.
Yes. There is some skateboarding in PCU.
There is a little bit of skateboarding in just a very appropriate, of course, the kind of the sort of metal-ish dudes. They start out on rollerblades, which I thought was like, uh-oh, roll it. But then, yeah, they are rolling around on their skateboards and use their skateboard to break a car window, which is a handy thing to have on hand. And it made me think about, Kevin, you know, we've touched on rollerblading a couple of times on this show. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about how the first time I ever saw a pair of rollerblades was at the Roller Kingdom in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, many years before the inline skating trend. And it was like people, a couple of dudes, and you know exactly the dudes these guys were. They were like street hockey, kind of long-haired, Red Hot Chili Peppers types of guys, and they showed up with their rollerblades. They were called inline skates at the time, and people lost their fucking minds. And I remember seeing them and being like, that's a whole new kind of roller skate. And those the dudes in PCU look exactly like those guys, like kind of long hair, amiable fans of you know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers or Psychofunkables, yeah. and roll around on their rollerblades and their skateboards. And that's it. That's all I got. That's it. They had skateboards. They were era appropriate.
It's you know, the whole term like PC is interesting to me from the 90s because you don't hear that much anymore. It's always a huge red flag these days if I'm talking to someone and they say, well, this might not be politically correct, but
but I'm going to say something racist anyway.
Yes.
Well, now it's woke. And, it's
yeah, it's but it was like, it's interesting how like Bill Maher had that show like politically incorrect because like, ooh, ain't I a stinker.
Yeah,
it's I mean, I do think it was more contained to campuses then. It was sort of this thing that people outside of the college would look at like, oh, look what stuff they're up to on the college campuses these days. So it's been interesting how some of those ideas have A, been given a bit more credence, and B, have like moved beyond the college milieu.
Well, right.
I don't hear people say like, this might not be woke, but but I'm sure that's coming.
Well, I think the woke thing is like, it's like another level of it. It's like the PC thing, like you said, it was always done with this almost like apologetic, like, this might not be PC. Woke is like an accusation that has now become this like weird, but it's based on that same idea that it's like you're being disingenuous by wanting somebody to not be a fucking racist. Yeah. You know,
it's definitely become like a rallying cry,
right,
for the worst fucking people in the world,
for and it makes you wonder, like
to be like, I hate the woke, you know. And it's like it really gets them fired up. And I've heard even now, like I've heard people say like the political divide in this country used to be kind of, or not even in this country, like in the world, it used to be like capitalism, socialism.
Right.
And the political divide now is woke and unwoke, which was what explains like the Republicans being so sort of sympathetic to Putin.
Yes.
And Russia. Like, well, they're not woke.
They do. They say what they think.
Yeah,
what they think are terrible things.
I don't know. On that jolly note, Michael.
Well,
this brings another fun-filled episode of Gleaming the Tube to an end.
Word up to that, Kevin.
I have some shit to plug.
Plug it away. Do it.
So recently I was a guest on Dragon Con's digital media track, and if you go to their kind of Twitch page or their YouTube page, I think you can see that on their Wednesday night hanging with creators thing. I was on there talking about the convention and some of the stuff I'm going to be doing there. And also there is a secondary podcast to this one called The Best Stuff in the World, which has a wonderful theme song.
I've heard good things about this theme song, Kevin. I heard it's got a lot of pep.
Written and performed by Michael. The most recent episode is about Watchmen, the comic book maxi series by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. And that's myself. I'm joined by Kevin Eldridge, who's been a guest on this show a few times. And we talk Watchmen for a bit. So there are links to that show. There's a link to that show on gleamingthetube.net. our website. So go check that out. And Michael's going to be on there sometime in the near future too, talking about something that we both really love.
Yeah, we got to figure out what we're going to talk about. Now, Kevin, let me ask you a question about the theme song to your new podcast. Uh-huh. Would you say that it's a great theme song for a podcast, or would you say that it's the greatest theme song for a podcast?
Thank you for listening. Our website is gleamingthetube.net. We're on Facebook at Gleaming the Tube, and our email is gleamingpod@gmail.com. Production assistance by Liam Gray. music by Kissing Contest. Skateboarding is not a crime.
Hello. Wait, I'm gonna.
We gotta keep that.
Yeah.